And so just as through a kind acknowledgement, we soften the other person, we also soften ourselves. It gives us a moment to pause, to breathe, and really acknowledge another human being. When I soften, when I acknowledge people, and I think acknowledgement is one of the most powerful tools we have to ensure the other person feels seen, they feel heard, they feel understood, they feel affirmed in who they are.
Hello, and welcome to the Mind Your Leadership podcast. Today, I will speak with Alicia Dunhams. I was her guest, and now she's my guest, so it's really a pleasure. Alicia is a versatile professional with a transformational impact in the fields of corporate leadership speaking, executive coaching, certified peacemaking, and mediation. She also serves as a board member for the Restorative Justice Nonprofit Organization. Alicia's expertise lies in the power of healthy conversations and storytelling, which she employs as a bridge to overcome conflicts in various settings. Alicia's influence extends beyond workshops and speaking engagements. Her book, I Go To, How Using the Right Words Can Radically Transform Your Life, Relationships, and Business, empowers readers and leaders of all backgrounds to harness the power of intentional communication for transformational results. Additionally, her new book, How to Talk to Your Enemies, offers invaluable insight on navigating difficult conversations and bridging divides. So as you can guess, we will talk about having healthy conversations, how communication is a crucial element in achieving our goals, better relationships, and better outcomes. So stay with us. Alicia, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Karen, thank you so much for the invitation.
Yeah, sure. So I would be happy to start with, you know, your personal life story. If you can share something with us that someone told you or offered you a new perspective, you know, to really resonated within you and changed your path or made you take it forward.
Thank you, Karen. Yeah, I find myself to be a bit of a philosopher. And so I love pithy statements and mantras and affirmations to support in navigating life. And I remember when I was young and attending UCLA, another student said to me the following quote, "Comfort breeds stagnation."
Oh.
And I love that. And when you asked me that question, I thought that's a really great way to start this off, this conversation off, because I truly believe, and one of the reasons I wrote my book, How to Talk to Your Enemies, 101 Ways to Turn Hostility into Peace. One of the reasons I did that is because I believe talking to our enemies is our next level of evolution and growth as human beings. And when I say enemies, I define enemies as those people that you kind of want to avoid in life, the people that make you feel shameful or triggered in some way. You want to cross the street when they're walking towards you, type of thing. And so it could be enemies, could be a lot of different definitions in life. I know some people feel it's a strong word for a title of the book, but I truly feel that we're treating each other like enemies, and we get to look at that. And so in the book, I do examine our biases, how our brain is wired, and really communication tactics and tools to be able to regulate your emotions and be able to lean into conversations that are uncomfortable, that are difficult, to be able to connect with other human beings, because our next level of growth is getting uncomfortable with people. And then we will learn something not only about ourselves, but about the other person.
Well, first of all, I really love the saying that you say, that if you're too much comfortable, you're in a stagnation path.
Yes, comfort. Yeah, comfort breeds stagnation.
Comfort breeds stagnation. That's a great pause. And you know, you delved quickly to your book. And yes, I wanted to ask you, what do you mean by enemy? But you already defined it. And as you said, enemy is actually someone who triggers us, right? So it can be everybody, anyone. It can be my spouse. It can be my kid. It can be my someone that I also love, right? So this is why it's so contrasting, enemy, right? What do you think about it? What do you say about it?
Yes, as I mentioned, a lot of people had some discomfort with the word enemy. Like, what is my, why would I want to talk to my enemy? Haven't they already harmed or hurt me? Mm-hmm. Am I just opening myself to be harmed again? So that's what people respond to it. And then, you know, our enemy could literally be our next door neighbor who has different political beliefs. It could be a coworker at work who undermines us. It could be a friend that just kind of makes us feel uncomfortable and like we're saying the wrong things. It's a person who ignites the fight and flight in you. It's a person that ignites the critter part of your brain. Like it could be your mother, like when she says something, and obviously she's not your enemy, but mm-hmm. the way we respond, it's like where we, when we, you know, react or when we say hurtful things and to maybe hurt the other person. So we kind of treat them like an enemy, like it's another person. It's the other, rather, you know, us versus them. So we come from that. And so if someone kind of triggers that fight, flight, or freeze in you, you just get to notice that. You get to be self-aware in that. It's like, oh, why is my spouse making me want to, you know, run away? Because I know I've had that feeling before. It's like you have a partner, you're like, oh, you think about how your life would be better if you weren't with them. And so that's something you get to look at. It's like, why is my next door neighbor, because he voted for a different political party, why do I avoid him at all costs and I don't want to make eye contact with him? And so we just get to notice this about ourselves. And so the book is all about compassion and to notice if you feel that certain way about someone, what does it say about you? Let's get curious about that and dig deeper to find, okay, instead of reacting from, and what I call critter brain, because some of the people might be listening, it's like, what does she mean by critter brain? I'm talking about the amygdala. I'm talking about the most ancient part of the brain that really kind of spins us into that automatic reaction versus a more deliberate response, which would come from what I call the smart brain, the prefrontal cortex. And so we get to really examine through our communication is asking ourselves the question, is what I'm saying, is it healing or is it harmful? And so many times when we have those kind of those shoot from the hip, fast reactions, it could be harmful to someone, calling someone a name or just being reactive. When we take a beat, when we take a pause and have a deliberate, intentional response, then we can heal the situation or create peace. Really turning something that is hostile communication styles into a peaceful outcome.
So I couldn't agree with you more, because this is what mindfulness is about, creating the space between the stimulation and the response and choosing freely how we want to act and behave, right? Instead of being acting upon our emotions and sensations and anger, right? So it's creating the space and choosing how to act. So I want to challenge you, you know, because for my experience, I'm working with a lot of leaders and organizations and individuals. And I know that a lot of us, you know, creating the space, okay, but now how can I speak what I'm feeling if I'm not, no, if I don't know what I'm feeling, if I don't know what emotion arises within me? So I think that you're talking about the communication, and I say, okay, let's pause for a minute, because before we create this communication with others, we need to create this communication with ourselves, right? To understand what I'm going through right now, what emotion arises within me in order to work with it instead of being managed by it. What do you have to say about it?
Absolutely. That's the first section of my book, is communicating with ourselves. Good. So it's divided into five sections. Communicating with ourselves is the first one. We get to hold counsel with ourselves. We get to tap in terms of self-awareness. What are my thoughts? What are my feelings? What are my physical sensations in this moment? We get to hold counsel and really get clear on who we are. We get to be self-reflective. before we even open our mouth and talk to other people. So the first chapter is the first section is communicating with ourselves. The next is communicating with others. That is being able to have empathy and to be able to greet someone else, to connect, to have empathy, to apologize, all of those things. The third is communicating through differences. So that is especially here in the United States is the political polarizations. And this could be applicable to many countries around the world. Yes. So moral differences, religious differences, political differences. So communicating through our differences, cultural differences, how we see the world. And then the fourth is communicating through conflict. Mm-hmm. When two kind of opposing parties want two different results or see the world in two different ways. So communicating through conflict. And finally, communicating through harm, which I address issues and topics like racism, sexism, bullying, gossip, hate speech. But before we even go there, it's like we get to sit with ourselves and take a big look in the mirror and mm-hmm. see how are we showing up in the world and who do we choose to be in this time of human history? Who do we choose to be in this moment? And so that's one of the self-reflection questions I have in the book is how do you choose to meet this moment? Mm-hmm. How do you choose to meet this moment? So we get to be really intentional about that. And that requires emotional intelligence and it requires the ability to be self-aware.
Can you give me an example of a difficult conversation that you observed or you were part of it and how you can use these tools and you can communicate better from choosing to communicate better? So if I'm listening to you and say, okay, that's great. I really love to communicate with my spouse. It really triggers me or with my kid or with my employee. But in this moment, I'm really losing it. What can I do differently? Or if you have another example, because I really believe that by listening to examples, you know, it put all the pieces together and it resonates well. Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of frameworks in the book and a lot of exercises. I actually give people over 100 scripts, communication scripts on how to respond in different situations. So if you don't know what to say, it's like you can open the book and say,
oh, just a moment.
Just a moment, you know, and it's a practice. Like everything, it's a practice. It's like we get to embody this work. We get to really integrate it into our life. So I would say a personal example is my mother. And we had this kind of ongoing conversation for years about her wanting me to purchase a home. Mm-hmm. And every conversation like is, when are you going to buy a house? When are you going to buy a house? And I just needed to, because it was causing me a lot of stress and pain because I was out there looking and I was, you know, having some issues. So this is how I responded. And this is my framework for a mindful response. The first thing, number one, is a kind acknowledgement. Number two is the mindful response. And number three is the powerful request. So number one would be, Mom, thank you so much for sharing your concerns, because I know you do it out of abundance of concern and caution and because you truly love me. And, you know, you're such a great mom because you're looking out for me. I completely understand. And talking about this and you bring it up at every phone call is really causing me lots of pain and anxiety because you know that I am looking for a home and I am kind of stumbling into some trouble. My request is that you no longer ask me about this process and I will let you know when I am at the stage where I will purchase a home. And so, kind acknowledgement, mindful response, like what's coming up for you in that moment, and then the powerful request. So you get to request. I said that to my mother. She never brought it up again.
Amazing.
I ended up buying a place and, you know, so it was, but yeah, it was, she never brought it up for about 2 years until I ended up buying a place. So
amazing.
So that's what you do. So the thing about kind acknowledgement, and that's why it's such an important part of the framework of the mindful response, is when you acknowledge someone, you soften their stance, if you will. It's like it soothes their nervous system. When you acknowledge someone, they want to they want to be that, you know, because when you acknowledge someone, it's like, I acknowledge you for, you know, being a leader in your field. I acknowledge you for being a loving, devoted mother. I acknowledge you for being such a loyal and committed husband. People kind of, you know, straighten their back and straighten their tie if they had a tie on. And it's like, oh, wow, they're receiving in that moment. Mm-hmm. And so when they receive, they're feeling nurtured and it soothes that the nervous system. And the reason I use the word and in between that, so we don't use the word but, we use the word and. So I acknowledge you. And when you bring up this particular conversation, topic, et cetera, it causes me great stress. It causes me pain. It makes me scared, you know, whatever, you know, your response is. And then when you have a request, what you're doing is creating a boundary and you're creating really kind of rules of engagement moving forward. But what they're doing is they're still kind of like, oh, I got this acknowledgement. Oh, this is what's okay. And then you tell people, because you teach people how to treat you. Mm-hmm. And so by having that request, it's like, yeah, I can, you know, I can definitely honor that request. Now, I'm not saying every conversation is going to go smoothly as 1, 2, and 3. And that's a really great place to start.
But, you know, I love it because first of all, I felt that you came out of respect to yourself, right? Because you felt you couldn't go anymore like this. So you respected yourself and then you respected her. So and you created a space for yourself. Okay. And this is a crucial element to really create space to listen to ourselves. You know, you talk about communication, but I think the most crucial component is to being able to listen. And first of all, listen to ourselves. How do I feel in this situation? Do I feel triggered? Am I angry? And then we can act with it instead of being acting upon it. So this is the first piece that I want to recall and say, okay, it's listening to ourselves, respecting ourselves, creating the space. And from this on, understanding how we want to go forward. The second thing that I love that you did, it actually, you saw her also, right? She felt seen, as you said, she felt acknowledged and seen and appreciated. You say, I see that you're really passionate about helping me. I see that you're really caring for me. So you refer to emotional aspect of her, and then she felt seen. And then you talk about the house. You started by seeing her emotions and caring for you, and then you moved on to the rationale about buying the house. And then you did it again, the same thing toward yourself. You said, I feel uncomfortable. I feel stressed. Okay, I know that I'm in this process, but this is what it caused me to feel. And actually, you created a new language, as I see it, an emotional language that we usually don't speak, right? We also, usually we say, okay, you need to do this. I need to do this, but we don't show up fully. And by creating these three steps, you actually invited a new language, creating the emotional speech, because usually we only talk from our mind, from rational cause and effect, et cetera. What do you say about it?
Thank you so much, Karen, for that. We get to meet people where they are. And so just as through a kind acknowledgement, we soften the other person, we also soften ourselves. It's like by really, it gives us a moment to pause, to breathe, to be present in that moment and really acknowledge another human being. And so I use the word soft a lot because it's the way I describe, because I can even feel in my body when I'm heated and hot and angry and triggered, like I feel tight. I could, it's my face. And when I soften, when I acknowledge people, and I think acknowledgement is one of the most powerful tools we have in our toolbox to really connect with other people and to ensure the other person feels seen, they feel heard, they feel understood, they feel affirmed in who they are. If we think about it, we have 8 billion people walking around this world with lots of feelings of limiting beliefs. I'm not good enough. I'm this, I'm that. And so we have, especially now with the mental health crisis that we're seeing because of the onset of social media, and you know, we can say the pros and cons of it, but it just seems intensified now because we're seeing people's emotions in the raw and we're seeing videos of things happening real time. So that creates a lot of mental turmoil, if you will. And so we get to acknowledge people and because everyone is just a little child inside that feels insecure, I'm not good enough. I mean, that's like, I think our general stance in the world. And so for another human being to see us is a really powerful way of being. And so going back to the language of emotions you were talking about, I truly believe in acknowledgement is that. And then we get to, like, you know, how are we going to move forward from this? So, like, this is how I feel like it, you know, when we talk about this conversation, it brings me pain and anxiety because I'm actively looking, and you know, I've, you know, hit some stumbles, you know, got outbid and blah, 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 you know, you can go into all that. And, you know, my request is we no longer talk about this, that our conversations focus on other things. And in that case, I gave space for my mom and I to talk about, you know, shopping or the latest TV show or, you know, what have you. And then, so we spent the next year and a half, 2 years did. And then when I bought the place, she was excited and, you know, and then it felt good, but I didn't have to go through that anymore. So I personally believe, so how to talk to your enemies is not about being a doormat. And because I call myself a peacemaker, and it's not about being a doormat. It is about advocating for yourself and the other person at the same time. So what that requires is for us to be agile. What that requires for us is to be transformative, is to be able to, how can I advocate for the other person looking at me and advocate for myself at the same time, creating a win-win situation. So it requires us to be on our toes. It requires us to be creative. It requires us to be agile. It requires us to be peaceful. It requires us to be connected. It requires us to be present. And so that's what really excites me about this book, because I see that there's so much to learn and to grow when you lean in and have these conversations with people that you might rather avoid.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, because, but you know, when you speak, it really, I feel your presence, I feel your security, I feel your self-esteem. I think not everybody feels secure or courageous enough to put boundaries and to show up fully and say, look, this is what I feel right now. I don't feel comfortable, you know. So people don't speak, they postpone the conversation, they don't show up. So, you know, it's like we're talking about communication, but if I'm going a deeper layer, it's the ability, and you talked about it a little bit, the ability to have the courage to show up, to put boundaries. And I think this is, especially in the workplaces, and if, or not only in the workplaces, it's challenging for us to put boundaries to other people because we don't feel comfortable. We want to please them. Why? Because we want them to love us, right? We all, as human beings, want to be loved. And if I will put boundaries, they won't love me and I will lose the love of them. So I prefer not to put boundaries, and then I give them advancement of me, give them place before myself. And then, so, you know, so I'm challenging you because I really connect to this communication aspect, but I want to go deeper and say, okay, the communication and bring yourself authentically, this is great. But before this, I think we need to increase our presence, our self-esteem, the understanding of what we are bringing to the table, and not to be connected to the rewards that we'll get. Because as you said, it won't be easy, right? Sometimes you need to confront. I'm sure your mother didn't like it in the first second that you start talking. Afterwards, she accepted it, but it wasn't easy to start this conversation. What do you think about it?
Thank you for that. And I thank you for challenging me, Karen. These conversations require vulnerability, and they do require courage as well. And not everyone's going to respond the same way. These are individual conversations, and everyone's going to have a different response. That's why it requires you to be agile. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say, and because you noted, you know, courage and self-esteem, et cetera. And, you know, obviously I'm a speaker and I'm a facilitator. So people at home might be listening to it. It's like, oh, in the workplace, I just want to make people happy. And what I say is boundaries are love. When you create boundaries, you are showing others, this is how I want to be treated. And please share with me, how do you want to be treated? So this is like a two-way conversation. It's a very symbiotic relationship. I talk about radical empathy in my book. And radical empathy is, you know, there's this concept called, you know, there's the golden rule and then there's the platinum rule. So the golden rule is treat others as you want to be treated. The platinum rule is treat others as they want to be treated. And people ask, Well, how do you know how other people want to be treated? Well, you ask, you build relationship, you have conversations with these people. Another part of radical empathy is focusing out on the other person. So you focus out, and the other person is, if, you know, if they are aligned and have done this work, because it does require work. This is all a practice. And so I would say, you know, my book is for everyone. My book is for mainstream, you know, eighth grade reading. Okay. In terms of who can access this book. And it does require you to tap into your own self-awareness and emotional intelligence. And so there are courses on, you know, EQ and, you know, leadership, et cetera. I've been through those courses. I'm certified in those courses. And part of that begins with just the simple asking the question, I'm curious, why did I think that way? What made me think that way? What made me act that way? So the self-inquiry and self-reflection is very important. And that's why I have that at the beginning of the book, the self-reflection questions, meditation, the ability to, you know, the BAR method that I list in the book. It's, you know, before you respond, you breathe, you acknowledge, and then you respond. So breath work is important, meditation, self-awareness, emotional intelligence, understanding what makes you operate, what belief systems, social narratives did you grow up with? Why do you think a certain person that looks a certain way will do this? Why do you, you know, fall down the slippery slope of unconscious bias? Mm-hmm. And how does that feed you? What part of the brain are you are you coming from scarcity? Are you coming from a place of, am I safe? Is there enough? And just to notice. So it's not judging. It's just notice. Oh, I'm curious. You know, I grew up a certain way and my grandfather would talk about these group of people. And I grew up with this belief system. I'm curious what made him think this way. What makes he think this way? How can I counter that? How can I get curious about my beliefs and certain stereotypes or about certain people and be able to lean in and get really curious on that? So part of it is just noticing. I call it hashtag just notice. Just notice. So no judgment. Just notice. Oh, I'm curious. I just had a thought about that person and it was a stereotype. What made me think that? Let me dig into that. So that the self-inquiry is really important. So, and these conversations, I'll just reiterate, require vulnerability and courage. And I want people to be courageous with me. I want people to give me feedback. I want people to challenge me as you are, Karen. It's like, I want people to take a stand for me to be a better person, to see things I might not see. We have blind spots. And so when someone shows up that way for us, that's love. When someone people pleases me, and my friend is visiting, and we were talking about how in some cultures, like if you have food in your teeth, they'll just let you continue to talk with food in your teeth. I'm like, I will be next to a stranger on a train, and I'll just be like, oh, you might want to go to the bathroom, and there's a little, you know, and I'll even maybe, you know, I will let them, or I'll be, are you open, you know, and you might want to ask the question, you know, but, you know, you got to give people the nod. That to me, that's loved, for someone to say, you got a piece of broccoli in your teeth. So, but some cultures are different. And so that's part of the social awareness, is when you go to a culture and maybe they don't make, or that particular person, because there's no monolith, but there maybe won't make eye contact, because I know Americans culturally are different from other people. And then again, in America, there's all kinds of stuff going on. There's all kinds of different peoples and belief systems. So we can't put everyone in a bucket.
I really, first of all, love the fact that you tell people that they have something in their teeth. I also see it as a brave act and appreciation that someone does it. Otherwise, you come home and then say, why couldn't they say anything? And you get mad. But another thing, I really want to circle back to the start of the beginning of a conversation that we talked about. I resonated back to you that it's important component of communication is listening. And another great component that I want to reframe what you said, it's the ability to ask questions. You know, there was a research about who is an excellent salesperson versus a moderate salesperson. And they found two qualities. They found that the excellent salespersons are the ones who 50% of their conversations are listening. And in the 50, they are mainly asking questions. And I really believe, and you said it, you know, the ability to be curious, to ask ourselves questions, other people questions. It's actually when we're embracing in the mindfulness in the day-to-day, we're adapting a beginner's mind, right? We're more curious to what's happening. We don't take anything for granted. We don't live by our assumptions. So we usually dare to ask questions, to challenge things, and then the transparent and the connection created, right? Because when you really challenge people and you really listen to them and ask them a question, you can really connect to what's important to them. Otherwise, you can have a conversation like everything is okay, but nothing touches. So I really believe that in order to enable a better connection and conversation, you need to dare to ask questions. And you know, I think as we grew up, we learned that asking questions, it's not a good thing because people are judging us. Well, don't you know it? You know, it was, you know what surprised me? But in one of my birthday, my friends told me what they love in me. So one of them told me, you know, I really love that you ask questions and you don't think twice and you have a naive aspect, state of mind and you let yourself ask. And you know, it was a oh moment because I said, okay, it's not common sense to ask questions. So I understood that not everybody feels comfortable being vulnerable, not knowing the answer, asking the question. They need to show up like they know everything. So in this place, there's no communication. And what you talked about, it's actually creating this space for vulnerability, not knowing the question, the answers, challenging ourselves, and then something deep can connect, right? I see you looking at me and I'm thinking, yes.
That's great what you brought up. And I think questions are really powerful to finding out about people and our self-inquiry questions in terms of finding out about ourselves. And what's important as well is you ask questions from a place of curiosity, no judgment, and definitely not from a place of one-upmanship. So you want to be very mindful of how you ask questions. So it's not like, how much money do you make? How old are you? You know, you know, things like that. You know, because that feels like, oh, are we keeping score? Like, if I say you're 45 and I say I'm 50, you're like, oh yeah, I'm younger than you or whatever. So that type of question asking is counter what we're talking about here. It's mm-hmm. getting curious and asking questions. Open-hearted questions. So open questions around, you know, I'm curious, you know, even like if someone says something harmful to you, one of the responses I have in the book is I'm curious. I've found that statement hurtful was that your intention. Mm-hmm. And so you, coming from a soft place, so tone and communication is very important. So the context of communication is so important. It's not just what you say, it's how you say it, it's who you say it to, it's why you say it, it's where you say it. So the context is very important. And so tone is very important. So a softened tone, a kind, vulnerable tone, a tone of presence is what you want to convey. Not a tone of like, I'm asking you questions so I can find out how much money you make and, you know, if I make more money than you or what have you. So that's where we want to kind of have a distinction there. And because it's not about that, it's about connecting with another human being. And so, believe me, and I say this from, because in my, you know, my late teens, I would be like asking questions about everything. Why did you get this? So it was almost, I call it the intrusive inquiry. And if you're being intrusive, that's not so. So it's, again, it's the style, it's the tone, it's the frame of how you're asking.
Yes, I love it. Elijah, I can speak with you for hours, but I see we need to wrap up. So before we wrap up and I ask you, where can people buy your great book that's really needed nowadays? Is there any question that I didn't ask you that you want me to ask?
I think we covered a lot, Karen. This is awesome. And for anyone who wants to purchase my book, well, you can go and download a free chapter at talktoyourenemies.com if you just want to get a little sampling of it, and then purchase the entire book on Amazon or where books are sold. So, but obviously Amazon.com. And you can go to aliciadunhams.com to find out more about me, or at Alicia Dunhams on social media.
Great, Alicia. Your book is really needed nowadays. So I hope many, many people will buy it and will learn to communicate better, because then we'll have peace and, you know, what we want, compassion and better relationships. So thank you very much for joining. And maybe we meet in another session afterwards.
Absolutely. I love it, Karen. So wonderful to see you again. And thank you for this opportunity.
You too. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. You're invited to subscribe to our podcast in order to know when we upload a new episode, and follow us on social media. Thank you for listening. Until next time, take care and bye-bye.